You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the thing I was telling Adam, I was mentioning Adam, is these two conservationists. I put the link in the chat room. It's from The Guardian. These two conservationists, they're going to into Sumatra, in a part of Sumatra where they call it the secret Noah's Ark in Sumatra, hoping to discover a hidden population of orangutans in high altitude forests and who knows what else. And the article briefly mentions the Orang Pendex. So, you know, who knows? There's a chance that these guys may come up with something that, you know, a photo.
Yeah, they might be. And good luck to them if they do. But you know, what I'd say is right now I know for a fact that on trail cams very recently,
yeah.
New species species that have been very rare have just been photographed. So it's very possible, and that's what I want people to understand.
Right, exactly, yeah. I mean, I still think that thing's probably out there. And like you said, it's not really that, I don't think it's really like that super exotic. It's just a bipedal.
No, it's not. I mean, I've got a whole bunch, you know, because I did that Orang Pendek project. You know, I helped Cliff Barrettman to set it up. I've got a whole bunch of casts here that he sent me, you know, because that project carried on for, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
And he's got tons of these casts from different animals. And I can see, looking at the foot casts I've got, I can see different animals, different foibles, which are evident from their locomotion, from the way they walk. Yeah, it's definitely out there. It's just a question if we get enough evidence before it goes extinct. That's all it is. Let's hope we do. Yeah, and you know, will I go back there? Hopefully, I will at some point. I've got no plans right now.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I'm kind of enjoying myself doing the Bigfoot stuff. As I'm in America, and I'm married to an American, it's quite interesting to do the Bigfoot stuff while I'm here. So that's what I've spent. Since I got back from Nepal and landed in America, I spent most of my time doing the sort of Bigfoot thing.
So yeah. What other places have you gone to look at for the Bigfoot? Because America's a big country. It's a lot of places to look.
Yeah, it's a big country, and I've only got so much time and money.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the places I went, which I mean, obviously, I went back to Oregon a couple of times, and
yeah.
We've already talked about that. I went to Alabama in December. And I think that was very, very interesting because David Ellis, who works on the Olympic project, he's kind of their sound man.
Yeah.
I'd originally got contracted by a lady. I get contacted by ladies and men all the time, you know, saying, look at my Bigfoot research, look at my Bigfoot research.
Yeah.
And most of the time, although I'm polite, it doesn't really interest me. But this one did. Because she got some recordings, interesting vocalizations, and I sent them to David Ellis from the Olympic Project, you know, who I respect, who's got a good knowledge of vocalizations. And he said, oh, you know what, there's really something potentially quite interesting here. I mean, when we've looked at other recordings before, he's been quick to dismiss them, which is what I want, really. I don't want anybody wasting my time. But this one's, you know, he found he couldn't really explain. So I went to Alabama and did an investigation there, which I enjoyed, you know.
Yeah.
And again, we got more interesting vocalizations, but I wouldn't say I got any good photographic evidence on the trail cameras. But we got more interesting vocalizations as well.
Hmm.
And I've been to a couple of these. I'll come on to more investigations I've done recently as well. I've been to some of these Bigfoot conferences. So I spoke at the Texas one, which was really good fun.
Yeah.
And at the International Bigfoot Conference in September, I did that as well. And I met some of the characters who I was interested in meeting. For example, Daniel Perez, who runs the Bigfoot Times. I liked him. He was a nice guy.
Yeah.
So I met some of the characters as well. The individuals are sometimes interesting. But yeah, so the Alabama was a big one. And I've been doing some research locally around my area as well. One of the areas, because I was asked about it, I should mention it, is one of the things that interests me, on the border here with San Diego, you've got the Otay Mountains,
yeah.
which are not far away from where I live. I mean, they're only about an hour's drive or thereabouts. And they're on the border with Mexico, and this particular area can be a bit sketchy, Tim, you know.
I can imagine.
For all sorts of reasons, which are pretty obvious. It's a bit of a sketchy area. But it interested me because there's a guy who published a book. His name completely escapes me right now, or a little bit. I think he's called Rocky. I can't remember his surname right now. But he had published a book which talked about he was in Border Patrol. And while he was in Border Patrol, he had experienced some very strange things in Border Patrol. On one occasion, this isn't a verbatim account, this is just from my recollection. He had basically, some of the Border Force people had seen, they were pursuing some, I think it was illegal immigrants across the border, and some great big creature, 6 or 7 feet, had started chasing them, you know?
Yeah.
And there'd been another account where a creature had chased them. And I was interested in that. So I've been doing some work in the Otay Mountains. I've set up a trail cam project in the Otay Mountains. And I've just got some decent... What I hadn't got, although I had trail cams, was the capacity for some decent night vision equipment, because it's expensive. You know, it's not like,
yeah.
It's not, you know, people say, well, you know, should you do this, should you do that? I say, well, yeah, I would do this and that if I had all the money to do that.
The time. I mean, on a small scale, I know what it's like. People have a lot of great ideas, but it's like,
yeah, but they're not prepared to give you the money to fund their great ideas.
Right, exactly. They just present you with the idea to fund and execute, and it's like,
And you know, not all the time, but a lot of the time, I've already thought of their ideas. It's not that I wouldn't welcome new ones, but you know, normally I've thought of it, but sometimes I haven't, and I welcome new ideas. But the bottom line is most of it is my time and my money. But I've just got this new night vision equipment, and so I'm going to do some work on the border with night vision equipment, so I can actually see if there's any potential for these Bigfoot-like creatures. But I've got to be careful where I go. I'm not going to stand near Border Patrol and do it. But if it's in an area which isn't controversial, let's say, I'll go there and do that and see if I come up with anything. It's always a long shot, and I've been spending some time with a Native American friend of mine, Marcel, and we've been going out into the sort of backcountry here. I got introduced and did another night investigation with an eyewitness who said he'd seen a Bigfoot-like creature a few years back in an area around the Laguna Mountain areas around here. So I've been doing some local investigations here, and I've got something very exciting happening at weekend, actually. At weekend, I'm going off. I can't exactly say where I am. All I can say, I'm allowed to say, is California. I'm going somewhere in California.
Yeah.
To meet a Native American chap who claims to A, have some Bigfoot hair, but B, to have some direct contact with Bigfoot. I've got to keep it very, very secret. We'll see what happens. These things are always a long shot. But that's taken a good few months of negotiation. So that's potentially very interesting. That's happening on Friday.
Oh, wow.
So that's potentially very, very, very interesting. And not just that, but I've got a couple of other things in the pipeline throughout the year, which I'm pretty interested in. So, you know, I will go off and do investigations, but I have to be hugely interested in them in order to do them, because nearly always it's my time and my money. I don't have that much time right now, so I have to be hugely interested in, and you know, very respectfully for those people who send me pictures of bushes, it's not going to be my time or my money to go and investigate them.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's it.
Yeah. Well, it's a you know, I'm glad you're on the trail of the Bigfoot here. I don't know what to make of American Bigfoot research. It drives me a little crazy. So it's wild stuff.
Well, the bottom line is it doesn't matter. I mean what don't let it confound you. I mean,
absolutely not. Yeah, I totally agree. I just, you know, I'm a social commentator as far as this goes.
I get you. But the bottom line is all that really matters, unless you just want a private relationship with your alleged Bobby the Bigfoot, which is fine. But all that really matters is, can you get scientific evidence which is measurable and repeatable? Yeah.
Right.
For me, yeah, that's what I'm interested in. And I make note, I'm very open about that. That's what I'm interested in. Quantifiable, measurable, repeatable scientific evidence. And then, you know, I'll leave it to others to carry on. I'm a field researcher. That's the limits of what I do. I'm not a geneticist. And so, you know, I would leave others to do that analysis. And that's the best I can do. And that's what I you know, I've always tried to achieve. And I'm very, very interested in the answers that I might give. And so, you know, like anything in life, I make value judgments about where I really want to go. But I've got a couple of things. There's three things I know that I'm doing between now and the end of September, which I'm really looking forward to. So we'll see,
nice.
You know. The journey keeps going.
Yeah. Well, since we're kind of throwing back to some of the other stuff, we did the Orang Pendek. But whatever became of Dr. Brian Sykes in this whole? He seemed like he was, you know, really invested in tackling these cryptids, and now I haven't heard anything of or from this guy in a year.
He stopped doing it. I mean, which is his choice. I mean, he has a topic and he moves on. And goes and does something else.
Right.
He's written
now
books on the Romanov, for example.
Now he's off doing something else, yeah.
It's not a passion of his. It's something that he had an interest in, you know. In the same way, I mean, what you've got to remember is, for me and you, and some of these other people, these are passions that you know, that these are things that we're interested in, answers to questions, everything else, our lives. But someone like Josh Gates, he's a TV presenter. It's his job. Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure, you know, he couldn't give a shit for the Yeti when he gets home, you know? Whereas I'm always thinking, yeah, you know, I'm thinking, you know, what about this? What can we do? Could I go back? All that? Because it's my life. Yeah, it's my passion. For him, it's a job. Brian Sykes, he's a scientist. He applies methodology. If he thinks it doesn't work, then he moves on and he tries something else. I think the only thing I think about with Brian Sykes is that, he did that research when I went with Laurie Simmons, as you know, on that show. We did that research, and I was quite pleased with the research we did. Obviously, we didn't get the genetic proof of the existence of a Bigfoot, but you know, he did very much believe that there was a Bigfoot in the area. And then in his book, he turns around and said, "Well, you know, maybe it could have been a tree shaking, and that was the knocking." And I said, "Well, you know," I said to him, "you know very well that it wasn't the tree." And it wouldn't explain all the growling behavior, which we heard, which both you and I heard, and all of that. And he said, yeah. He said, but he backpedaled from that.
Yeah.
And I wish he'd had the guts to not backpedal from that, because he did get scientific permit to do Bigfoot research. Now, I understand from Craig Wolterhiser that people had got research before for a camera trap project, but nobody had ever got a scientific permit to do genetic research of that nature. And he got samples, and we worked with Oregon Ministry of Fisheries and Wildlife and Fisheries. And I think it was a big interest for those people who say, well, you know what, the government know all about them. They're just conspiring to knock it down. You know, the Wildlife and Fisheries guys were very cooperative. So they weren't hostile at all.
So I think
that was an important project. And I think, you know, I did hope he would have had the guts for to talk about his earlier convictions, and when it came around to publishing his book, but he retracted from that, I think, which was not to his credit.
Yeah, it sounds pretty disappointing, because I remember when we talked originally, it was like, this guy, he had a crazy-ass experience with you out there. And
yeah, he
like,
did, yeah,
he,
yeah.
If he had really said something about it and been honest about it and everything, or at least been forthcoming. That's probably the best word.
Well, I wouldn't have even minded if he hadn't been forthcoming, because, you know, you could say, in the same token as me with my weird experience, I could say, well, you know, I wasn't forthcoming with it because I was worried about my job and a number of other things and the advantage. But I think the difference between my experience and his experience is I was not contradictory. So when I did talk about it, I said exactly what happened. You know?
Right, exactly. That's what I mean.
I didn't change my story on my account in any way. I said what happened. And his account and his experience changed in between his book and what happened, I think. So he had a real opportunity to open it up wide as a real potential, and he didn't do. He played it safe. So
right,
it's probably his loss, though, I think.
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, someday they'll figure this out, and he'll go down in history as one of the guys who tried and failed.
If he pushed it a little bit, I'm convinced that he would have got the evidence he needed if he just tried a little bit harder for a little bit longer. I know we all say that about the research, but I knew what he was onto, and I think he would have probably got what he needed with a bit more pushing.
Well, you almost wonder if, like, and it, not even in a conspiratorial way, but just sort of like in a human nature way or something, he was like, okay, I've gone as far as I'm comfortable going with this. Like, I could answer this question, you know, I could maybe get to the bottom of this, but I don't want to be that guy, you know what I mean, or something.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, there were some very amusing experiences. There's one where he turns up, and I'm going to meet him in this location. And he's got this bandana. I don't know what it is at the moment, but people wearing bandanas seems to be all the rage. But he turns up with this bandana and this big Bowie knife strapped to his side. And he says, you know, no, this is how you work my car if there's any problem. And I'm saying, well, I'm not leaving you there. And I'm thinking, this is like some weird episode of Doctor Who, yeah? And as we get nearer to the area, this bloody thing's growling, you know. And then we went up on the road at the top, and there's myself and Laurie and him, and this thing's growling and knocking, and he's going, you bloody thing, don't you realise this is your last bloody chance? If I don't get the evidence for you, you're buggered. Yeah, you'll bloody well be extinct, you bastard. Just railing at it, and it was just hilarious. I was falling about. I mean, this is the world's leading geneticist arguing with a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was wonderful. You know, would have made great TV. I wish I could have filmed it, because it would have made great TV.
Yeah. Well, it's very weird, and you know, but like I said, part of me wonders if he subconsciously, you know, was just kind of like, I don't want to be the I've gone, maybe, you know, maybe whatever you guys experienced freaked him out. Maybe it freaked him out.
Well, when I see you in Boston, we can pick up that conversation.
Oh, all right. He's teasing inside info, folks. That's good, because I like inside info when I'm inside. Otherwise, it's like, spill the beans, motherfucker. But if I'm on the inside info is great for me.
I'll make sure you're on the inside. Just don't let me forget what I just said.
Oh, I won't. So, what are you talking about, coming to Boston at some point?
Yeah, definitely within the next 12 months or so. I don't know exactly when.
It's not one of these three things you've got planned, then.
But yeah, I'd like to come over to Boston. I'd like to see you. I'd like to go over to that museum of Lauren Coleman's as well. And I'd like to go to that Hockenock Swamp as well. I'm interested in that Bridgewater Triangle thing.
You should just come and stay with me. I'm like right in the middle of all that.
Yeah, you said. So I think that would be great. I'd like to come do that and have a couple of adventures with you. I mean, we'll sort that out at some
we'll
point. Definitely,
we'll
sort that out. We'll have a couple of adventures and do that. So I'd like to do that.
Now, are you surprised after all these years that we still don't have any evidence for any of this stuff? I mean, it's funny, because if you look, though, it's like the cryptozoology, the good cryptozoology people, like Lauren, you, me, I put myself in some lofty company there, but we can look at the news and we see that there's reason to have hope still, because they are finding all these weird creatures, but it's like they're always just kind of like a little bit different from a regular creature where people don't freak out. You know what I mean? Where it's like they found a different species of deer, or it's like they found a different species of bat. They found this new thing, and it's like they keep finding these things. There should be hope that they will find one of the, you know, legendary creatures, but at the same time, it's kind of frustrating because they haven't yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I take your point, it's frustrating, but of course, you know, we are looking for all these new creatures, and new species are found all the time, as you've just alluded to, and sometimes very large species. And I'm not going to do a big list. You know about them, and you see them all the time. So the question is any of them, for want of a better word, the more glamorous species? You know, the more glamorous cryptids, do you know where they'd be found? Well, we don't know, do we? I mean, we'd really hope. I would love. You know, what you when you say glamorous, essentially you're talking about bipedal things or lake monsters.
Right.
Because
right.
I spent some time at Lake Hodgie, where down here where there's another lake monster. So that was the other piece of cryptid research I did recently. But so there are these things. I mean, I can't say for definite. I'd say, you know, I'd hope so, and I think that's the only thing you can really do.
Yeah.
I'm very, as I said to you before, I'm very suspicious of people who think they have solid answers and know it all.
Oh, God,
and know
yeah.
the truth. I mean, you would hope so. I mean, it's always been my firm belief since I was a teenager that in very remote parts of the world, it's inherently plausible and indeed and or likely that pockets of distant relatives of ours coexist or have coexisted until extremely recently. And that's what I've been seeking to find evidence of.
Yeah.
I would just hope that one day we stumble across one. I mean, and you saw with Brian Sykes' research, what you did see with Brian Sykes' research is that you saw Zana. I made a film called The Last Living Neanderthal, which was originally called Russian Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And in that film, the anthropologist community there were very skeptical about Zana and her son Quit having anything unusual about their genetics or lineage in any way. Now, recently in Brian Sykes' book, one thing he did do was a re-examination of the skull of Quit and came to the conclusion that some of his genetics marked and indicated an earlier lineage out of Africa, a previous migration, which is remarkable, because what you're saying, and I think, you know, what you have seen in 20 years in our scientific understanding is much more understanding of our own heritage, much more understanding genetically of other species, and much more understanding of our human lineage in some ways.
Yeah.
So, for example, it used to be thought that there was no way that Neanderthal man could have had any sexual interrelations with us. Or if they did, there was no genetic offspring. And now it's very clear that there is Neanderthal DNA in most of us of European descent to a greater or lesser degree, up to 3%. So, you know, some of the answers may come from us as well.
Yeah.
With our own improved scientific understanding of really our own makeup. And I think, you know, as science advances and genetics advances, I think we may have a few shocks about where we're from and our origins, possibly. But, you know, I would love a cryptozoological discovery of that nature, absolutely, Tim. It's what I've worked for.
That's what we all want, man. Yeah, we all.
Yeah, I don't want it to be something that consumes me, so it makes my life unpleasant.
No,
it is a passion.
Exactly.
But I don't want it to gnaw away at me, like it has other people in the past. And I think that's important that I don't let that happen.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with that. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, look at me, I'm gonna move on from Bigfoot and all this to next week's show with Marie Jones. Probably won't even talk about Bigfoot, get into weird science and stuff, so Now, I had a question I was going to ask you, and now it floated right out of my brain. But it's, we were just talking about the Bigfoot and trying to, to the point of what you're saying, kind of, is that, I don't know if you saw this recent article, but it was like, they now think maybe humans came to North America way, way earlier, like, than ever they had ever thought before. It's very controversial, but it's some new study from the San Diego Natural History Museum, actually. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I mean, and there are, the point that I'd say is there are these strange studies and there are these new studies very regularly, all the time. And you know, the reason I gave you those examples was because I wanted to demonstrate very clearly that there is science and knowledge that's changing very rapidly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's developing as we go. Literally, I mean, look at the developments in anthropology, paleontology, genetics, and how we extract genetics that have happened within a few years. know, I had a wedge of the Arampan deck. I knew it had been eating a particular rattan thorn. How did I know? Because I found its prints, and I saw, you know, we heard the rustling in the bushes. It was almost certainly from the Arampan deck. It was right on it. You know, we saw the prints moving away from it. So it's a reasonable assumption in those circumstances, as opposed to a gifting bowl type assumption. And you know, if I bagged that and I sent it off to Todd, this hotel, but he wasn't able to extract the DNA from the wedge. I mean, these days he probably would have been able to, because we would have been able to get the saliva. This was years ago when I got this, you know. So there is this. And also, I mean, you know, one of the things that skeptics would say, and it's important that we can consider skeptical points of view and not dismiss them.
Is
say, you know, well, with the advent of technology, you're seeing more people, for example, with phones with cameras on them. And I'd say, yeah, that's certainly true. And what that means is that the most likely... So let's cut back 20 years ago, when I first started looking for the Orang Pendek in Sumatra.
Right.
It was actually, I think it was January. It would be 20 years in January.
Wow.
When I first went looking for that. When I first went up, I hired a guide and went up Gunung Tuja. On my own with this guide, looking for evidence of it. You know, when I first started to try and make contact there, you know, you used to write letters, or there was one phone in the village, and you know, you used to have to wait for this woman to contact Sahar, who's passed away, so I could speak to him. These days, his children Facebook Live practically from the place. So, you know, I would say, yeah, with the Orang Pendek, the most likely candidate for getting a photograph will be a farmer, a local farmer around there who sees one on in one of his fields, and he takes a picture of it on his camera phone, you know. That wouldn't surprise me at all if that's how that goes down.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's important to understand and evaluate critical opinion, providing it's reasonably thought out. I mean, you made an allusion at the beginning of the piece or interview to somebody who was deliberately cynical and sceptical before they even analysed the information
that
you were presenting. And what I'd say is, you know, you should have critical opinions. Some of the researchers in cryptids, or you just want to have people around them who agree with them. I'm good with people disagreeing with me. I have no problem with that at all.
Yeah, well, it's one. Yeah, I mean, if I don't know something about, you know, if I think something's so crazy, I'm not going to look into it. I'll just say that's too crazy for me to look into.
I don't know.
I don't go out there and, like, you know, make a big thing about it. You know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So I think more people need to be like that, but you know, that's the world we're living in. So now talk about these trips to, you say you went to Roswell and outside Area 51. I guess what. Because that's not even your bag, man. So why did that come out of the portal experience? Was that something you wanted to you know, was that inspired by the portal experience, I guess I'm saying? Or is that just something because you're in the area kind of now, or at least, you know, maybe you were in the process of moving there or whatever, that you were like, hey, I'll check these out because they're kind of like big paranormal tourist destinations?
Well, the Whaley House. Sorry, a plane went over at the size with the first bit of your question about the Whaley House.
No. Well, we're not on Whaley House yet. I want to talk about the trips to Area 51 and Roswell and sort of.
For Area 51
were
and Roswell.
Were those inspired by the portal experience?
Yeah, they were. I mean, they were inspired. It was a mixture of inspiration and opportunity. Yeah. I had a friend come over for my wedding, Anthony, who was my best man at my wedding, and he wanted to go over to Vegas, and while we were there, he said, you know, would you mind going to Area 51? And yeah, I was interested in going over to Area 51, yeah, directly because of my experiences of seeing these things. I thought it might give me some inspiration and help me to think about them.
Yeah.
And by the same token, that was exactly the reason why I went to Roswell as well. I went to Area 51. When did I go there? That was May. I went to Roswell in December. I was interested in going there to see if it would help my further my understanding.
Yeah.
And it was good fun. I mean, one of the things that I like to think about when when I'm in the in Area 51, obviously you can't go into Area 51,
right,
it's a
right.
secret base. But there's an entrance where you can go nearby and you see a car parked up and then you come away, you know, unless you're an idiot, you know.
Right, right.
you don't go beyond the barrier, and I didn't go beyond the barrier. So go to that, and then there's a place called the Little Alien Inn, which I'm sure you've heard of, in Rachel. And there's a little cafe thing there. And Anthony went off to buy some, you know, alien artifacts. You know, they sell things like mugs and, you know, that sort of shit. And I went to the
It's called the tourist
trap. Yeah. It's a tourist trap. You buy some crap, alien crap, and then you move on. So he went to get some of that. And I was just sat at the, and it was hot, you know, it's Nevada in May.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hot, and we've been traveling through the desert. And I went to get myself a chilled can of cola, you know, Coca-Cola, you know, from the thing. And I sit down, and this guy sits down next to me, and he's got this black leather jacket on and black shades, yeah. And it amused me. And I looked at him. I thought, oh shit, it's a weirdo or something. And he says, and he asked me where I'm from, and I says, oh, I'm from England, all this lot and everything, blah blah blah. And then he says to me. He says a couple of things, and I'm only half listening to him because I'm ready to go. You know, Anthony's bought his crap by this stage, and I want to finish my Coke and go. And he says to me, you better get back to England before President Trump wins the election and starts a nuclear war in 2018. Yeah? and I said, all right, okay, mate. And me and Anthony, we're in the car driving back, and we were laughing away going, hey, Anthony's going, I'm going to say to the guy, I said, there's no way. I mean, what's that guy talking about? He's absolutely crazy. There's no way Trump's going to win the election.
Oh,
jeez. And we're laughing about it. And I was like, and then afterwards I thought, oh, shit.
You're laughing now, huh?
Yeah. Laughing now still, but a little bit. Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure that won't happen. I'm sure he was just a weirdo, but I think it's a good anecdote. I enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah.
So I went to Roswell as well, and had a look around there, and again, you know, bought some crap, and it was interesting, and you know, had a look around. It helps me think, but I don't think it brought me any closer to any answers. It was just interesting.
Yeah. I've never been to Roswell. I've always wanted to check it out. Everyone's like, oh, you got to go.
It's worth it. The museum's interesting, you know. It's a big, big museum. And, you know, what you need to do is wander around it a few times. You wander around it the first 10 or 15 minutes and you think you've done it. Then you need to wander around it again and then wander around it again. So wander around it a few times and just do that.
Good advice. I give you that advice when you go to Lawrence Museum. It's like it's like jam-packed with stuff. You want to like make a couple rounds through there.
Yeah.
Although you're in the museum, so it's pretty cool. I've never been to a museum where I'm in it, so there are no museums with me in it. So, but maybe someday.
Maybe one day.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe one day.
Exactly. Now we'll talk about the Whaley House, because as I said at the beginning of the show, folks, I was out in San Diego for Paramania 2. I went to L.A. for that, and then took an extra week and went down to San Diego to see my family down there, and on my way, it was just very weird. This is funny in a sense because, like, it sort of goes to sort of the weird nature of the stuff we look at and stuff like that, I guess. But, you know, I'm riding around L.A. with Greg Bishop and a bunch of the guys from Paramania, just bumming around on Facebook, and I see a picture of you in the Oja Mountains. I think I said that right. Yeah. And I'm like, and it says, like, you know, something San Diego or whatever. And I'm like, what is Adam Davies doing in San Diego? So, like, I click on your Facebook, and I'm like, it says you live in San Diego. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to San Diego, like, tomorrow. Yeah. What is this? This is so weird. And I never would have, you know, when you're on vacation, you don't have much time to surf around on Facebook. You know?
No, of course not.
It's a complete happenstance. I could have easily gone to San Diego, come home, and then been putting together season 10, looked and been like, what the fuck? So the fates intervened and allowed us to meet up in San Diego. And then there's another weird, like, part of this story, because I was meeting Adam on a Thursday. Adam was going to meet me at about 6:30 or 7 o'clock with his lovely wife, Nadia. And so I had already done a lot of the big tourist destinations in San Diego already, and so I was kind of just having a relaxing day, and we were going to meet down in Old Town, which is where the Whaley House, and I was like, well, I've done the Whaley House like twice, but that was like 10 years ago, so let's do the Whaley House again. I said to myself, us being me. So I go and I do the Whaley House tour, and I text Adam, and I'm like, hey, I'm on the Whaley House tour. I'll be out at about 7, and I'll meet you at the restaurant, which is like, you know, a few steps down the road. And then Adam writes back, I work there. I work at the Whaley House. I'm a tour guide. And I'm like, what the hell? I should have worked it out differently and gone when you were touring. But by then, my trip was almost over, so I couldn't sort of rearrange things. But it was just another weird case of, like, serendipity there that it was like, holy shit. And then, you know, we went out for drinks and talked a lot about your experience working at the Whaley House, which is this crazy, as you said, it's like one of America's most haunted houses. I try not to give any location the absolute distinction, because then you get a call from someone like in Biloxi, who's like, yeah, come down to the haunted house of Hillside, motherfucker. And it's like, oh, all right, okay.
My house be the most haunted house in America.
Exactly. Look, I love this. An English guy doing a southern accent. So,
yeah, I don't care now. I'm doing it because I'm enjoying myself.
So,
this is your last show. I'm going to do it.
There you go. So that was the kind of – that was the weird – couple of weird cases of serendipity. And Adam works at the Whaley House, folks. So it's like I –
only Friday nights. I only do it Friday nights. I did do it Thursday and Friday, but I only do it Friday nights now, yeah.
Well, I guess let's just start with how you came to work at one of America's most haunted houses. How did that even, like, I guess, like, what sort of inspired you to do that?
Well, what it was, again, I was trying to, again, you know, my experiences a few years ago with those things opened me up to exploring a number of different fields, as we've just discussed.
Yeah.
But again, I can't say it enough. I want to make a distinction that I haven't found any overlap between them. You know, they're just different interests.
Right.
I found myself in a situation where I went to the place because I'd heard about it, found it very interesting. I had a couple of friends over from England who were into that sort of thing as well, and I went with them as well. And I went a few times, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed wandering around. I went in the day, and I went at night. And so, first of all, I volunteered a little bit as a docent volunteer. And I did it a few times. I did it initially for a few days a week. And then I took a sort of docent tour guide sort of test, passed that, and now I do tours. I was doing it Thursday, Friday. It was a bit much. Worth working, so I do it just Friday nights now, and I've been doing it since the beginning of November, and I've done it a lot. So I was there originally in the days, now I'm there at nights. Used to be a couple of nights, but just recently I've dropped it down to just sort of one night a week. But I've done it for a long time now, a long time comparatively speaking.
Well, it's interesting because I was asking you this question, and as you were answering it, I kind of like slap myself in the head in a sense, where it was like, well, if I lived in San Diego, that's probably exactly what I would fucking do too. I would try to get a job at the Whaley House, and you know, you're more than likely you might experience something like, the old idea of like science, you know, repeatability. It's like you're not necessarily in there doing scientific experiments or anything, but you're certainly occupying that space on a regular basis. It's like I wrote an article about the Whaley House like 10 years ago for the Coast to Coast magazine, and I tried to talk to like the tour guides because it was like, well, you guys are here more than anybody.
Yeah.
So you have to have the most craziest experiences. So what kind of experience?
Well, I'm there, you know, what I'm thinking is, you know, on average, I've been there 2 days a week for 4 or 5 hours a day for 7 months. So I've spent a lot of time there, you know, more than people would on a tour. You know,
well,
more than your
weekend warrior ghost hunter does at a sanitarium or some shit. I mean, this is like you're embedded into this.
Exactly. So I wanted to do something, you know, you know what I'm like? If I'm going to investigate something and I want to do it thoroughly, I'm not going to do it half-assed.
Right, right.
So,
well, it's actually pretty genius the more I think about it. So, yeah, go on.
Yeah, I wanted to spend some real time there and see different experiences and understand it. So, you know, that's the way to do it. So I researched all the history about it, so I'm confident enough to the tour guide thing. And I think people like my tours. I mean, I got some good feedback, and you heard about that when you were there. So,
yes.
So,
well, you're on Friday night, dude. That's prime time. I mean, that's, you know, that's like the one of the best spots to get.
Yeah, and you know, and I've enjoyed it. And you know, strange things do go on there. It's not like, you know, it's not like the Amityville House or anything horrific. It's more creepy, you know.
Right, right.
But it is a museum, and it's not like the Disney House either. So in other words, there's no pulleys and rings and stuff like that.
Right,
you're there
right,
to interpret,
right.
Interpret what you see and feel. And I think, you know, you do have to do one thing I'm very big on is the element of discernment in all of this investigation. So sometimes people see and hear things they want to see in any situation, you know.
Right, right.
The amount of times I've been out with people wandering around and they wanted to see a Bigfoot, so they see a freaking Bigfoot. You know what I mean? And every
yeah.
shadow is a freaking Bigfoot.
Yeah.
By the same token, if you're in the Whaley House and you want to see a spirit and there's plexiglass and you think, oh, that reflection, that's probably a ghost, you know? It's the same thing.
Right, right,
but
exactly.
By the same token, there yeah. are things that have happened there which I struggle to explain as not being something very unusual.
Mm.
You know, I've seen stuff shoot out of the... I saw a white dome-like thing shoot out of the carpet once on one occasion, which was opaque and white, and it shot out twice myself when I was with two other women. And I found that very difficult to explain. People regularly see orbs. Now, sometimes orbs can be dust particles, but they're very often blue or green, and they're not right light reflections because there's nothing that's directly that could explain it. There's no blue or light reflection in there.
Right.
So what are they, you know? People often report having their hair pulled. I've seen people have their chairs pulled away. Often people report the doll's eyes blinking, for example, and flying around the room regularly when I'm doing tour guide stuff. Do they talk about that? I had one really interesting thing which happened about 4 weeks ago.
Nice.
And I was worried. I was a bit worried about how this would roll because there's a guy who walks in, and he's got this bandana on. I'm not going to say what color it is.
What is with you and the bandanas, man?
Huh?
What is with you and the
yeah,
bandana?
It's another bandana. Yeah, it's like I've got something about bandanas tonight. It's a bandana thing. But this guy walks in with this bandana on, and he walks in, and you know what? He does this swagger, yeah, as he walks in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, he's going to be a dick, you know. You just as he walks in, I think, oh, he's going to be a dick. So he walks in with this swagger. But, of course, you're professional. You don't say anything. And then and he's got a girlfriend who walks in behind him with this, with like, very long nails.
Yeah.
And they sat down in the corner, and I'm doing my tour, and I'm talking about what happens. Yeah, I'm talking about the house history, blah blah blah. Yeah, and he screams, but not like a man scream. It's like a little girl scream. You know what I mean? Ah,
yeah,
like
yeah.
really high pitched. And I'm like, what's the matter with you? You know? And he said, well, behind you, I saw this figure that materialized, had some sort of top hat on. Smiled, took the top hat off, and just freaking disappeared. Yeah?
Jesus.
And the guy then stuck to me. Him and his girlfriend stuck to me like glue, you know?
Yeah.
Like they were surgically stuck to my shoulders for the entire time as I went up the stairs and down the stairs. When the guy, I opened the door to let the guy out, you could physically see the relief. You know what I mean? He just, yeah?
Yeah.
And that's very hard to explain. You know, either he had the most vivid imagination ever, or he was shitting himself to for some bizarre reason to get attention off me, which I can't think why he would want to. Or he saw a ghost. So it's one of those things. But there are a number of things that are reported there, and I find it interesting. You know, I enjoy it. It's good fun. The people there are really nice and very professional. The house is extremely creepy. And you know, I'm spending a lot of time there, and it helps me completely different discipline to looking for a Yeti or a Bigfoot.
Right.
The two do not overlap, but I find it great fun running around the Whaley House looking for ghosties. You know, great fun. Enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever felt anything like touch you, or sort of like any sort of?
Only
like
you when you had a few drinks, but you told me not to talk about that. You blamed it on too much beer, didn't you, or something? What was that?
Oh,
have I ever felt? Have I ever felt anything touch me? No, I've not felt anything touch me. I have seen strange things there. I told you I'd seen some sort of shape or apparition shoot out of the carpet once.
What about like the other tour guys? What are some of their...
Oh, they've seen stories. I mean, several of them talk about how they've seen the figure of a woman and or a man wandering around.
Jeez.
And they've got some strange photographs. I mean, one of them has got a photograph of the dolls, for example. And one of the photographs, the dolls' faces are all straight. And the other one of them's smiling.
Oh,
and it's not something she's published and looked for glory on. Or like, she's just like showing it to us as we wander around.
I should look at my pictures. I took a lot of. That's what they say on the tour. Take a lot of pictures, but I was like that guy that.
Were suspicious of that, but they say take a lot of. They say take a lot of pictures because they genuinely want you to capture things. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Because we have a number of people who capture unusual phenomena and then send them in. Yeah, and we're interested in it. So we'll look at what the pictures that they come through because we're interested to see what people have got. But, you know, I mean, what I want to say as well is, in all my years of investigation, because I think this is important, let me just say this before we move on anyway. So, I've been investigating and doing cryptozoology and all this phenomenon for over 20 years, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In my life, I have seen the Celluloid Serpent, yeah? Which was like 16 or 17 years ago, yeah?
Yeah.
Even longer, maybe 20 years ago, nearly, yeah? So... I've seen that in Norway. I saw those things in 2014. Yeah?
Yeah.
And so there was nearly 15 or 16 years went by when I didn't see anything unusual at all, even though I'm doing all this all over the world. I got close to Young Planet, but I never saw it. And then I saw something strange in the Whaley House a couple of years later. So I want to make the point that, you know, to see and experience things, even normally, of a cryptozoological and or a paranormal nature, for me personally, is very rare. And I'm often very wary of people who say, well, I saw a Bigfoot in Oklahoma, and I also saw a Bigfoot in Washington, and I saw one in, Ohio, yeah? Because my normal reaction to that, my normal prejudice to that is bullshit, you know?
Right.
Because these things are very, very rare. And, you know, the experiences I've had, years and years of research all over the world looking for all of these things, and I've had, you know, really three or four experiences at most in many, many years, which I can't really explain as being something which are indistinct from the norm. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. So I want to say that. I don't want people to ever think I'm under the illusion that, you know, I walk down the street and a frigging elf jumps out or something. It doesn't, you know. So you know, it's very, 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 very unusual for any of these things to happen happen generally and to happen to me. And I spent so many years researching these things that, yeah, but ultimately, all I ever wanted to do was see a Bigfoot type creature, an Orang Pendek or something like that, which I haven't seen yet. So I'm hoping one day I'll do it. And I do have a little bit of a kid at a Christmas approach and thinking, yeah, well, maybe I'll see one finally this weekend, or maybe I'll be in June when I'm on another trip, or
right.
You know, September when I'm on this one. You know, maybe this will be the time, you know. But I do think that a little bit. Of course, I do. But you know, I what I say about the Whaley House, I've enjoyed it. You know, it's been great fun. I've enjoyed the people. I've enjoyed the place. I like running around looking for ghosties at night as a tour guide on a Friday night. Great fun. You know, enjoyable.
Yeah. Now, what happens at night after the tours are over? They just close it down and then it's empty all night. Like, or do people like rent it for shit in the overnight?
Sometimes ghost hunt people rent it out.
Yeah.
Sometimes private tour people rent it out for a bit. But a lot of the time it's quiet. I mean, it made me laugh. A few months ago, myself and the head docent, a guy called Brett, were shutting it down. It was just me and him because there was very unusually a bad storm in San Diego. So there's just me and him in a storm in the Whaley House, and things are rattling. Yeah, and we heard this, like, walking, you know, like footsteps going up the stairs. There's nobody else about. I was thinking, this is such a B movie freaking scene, you know. You've got we're in this ghost house.
Yeah,
the panes, the windows are rattling. There's a big storm. There's only two guys in it,
and suddenly the ghost walks up the stairs.
Oh, man.
It was great. I love all that shit. But you see, there's nothing threatening there. I don't feel threatened by anything in the Whaley House. I often wander around it on my own.
Yeah.
And sometimes in the dark. And when I first did it, I remember when I first, because I used to wear a period costume, and they said, oh, go and get changed, and it was dark, you know. I was thinking, I'm wandering around in this bloody place in the dark. What's going on?
Yeah.
But now, you know, I'm personally comfortable doing that, and it's been great fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it must be cool to, like I said, to embed yourself in there. Now, we're going to wrap up the live show in a minute. We'll probably chat for like 5 minutes after that. You don't have a heart out or anything, right?
No, I'm fine. I'm just pouring myself a brandy.
I'm
good for 5 minutes. I want to have a talk to you anyway.
All right. Well, we're going to keep, it's going to keep recording when the live show ends. So don't say anything outrageous, because we got to, I'll have to call you back after I wrap up the show, if you want to chat.
Yeah, sure.
But thanks to the folks who joined us in the chat room. There's a bunch of them there, Bruce and Digger Dog and Flabdoodle and Jim and Old School Nate and a bunch of other folks, who had some great questions and some thoughtful things to say about Adam's conversation here with us. And where do you now you had a couple books. They're still available on Amazon if people want to check them out. Where are they?
Or they can go to my public Facebook page, yeah. My last one was Mambi's a personal investigation,
yes,
but I have an Adam Davis. I have an Adam Davis public Facebook page. They can go to that, and I'll do a new book next year. New book coming next year.
Nice. A new book, similar to the other two, sort of like recounting,
yeah,
updating everyone on your adventures and stuff.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, then you got to come to Boston so I can get into the book somehow.
Yeah, of course.
We're going to
get yourself in it.
Or something.
I'll give you a mention, I promise.
There you go. Well, like I said, thanks to all those folks, and check out the public Facebook page. There you go. All right, so the live chat's over. That was awesome, man. That was interesting stuff. I like I said, we're still on the air technically. We're still taping, so don't go.
Don't go saying anything. No, it's cool.
Yeah. But in a sense, I want to kind of like, it's kind of weird, but I also want to apologize for having to rehash the whole Portal thing, because it's like, but that thing just captivated people. I don't understand.
No, they're interested in it, you know, because it's so unusual and so bizarre. And when it first happened to me, I was just like, ugh, this is just the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
But I've got more, over the last few years, I've got more used to it. So when me and John first started talking about it, it was so unpleasant. It actually felt like physical pain almost to talk about it. It was so awful. But now I've spent more time processing it, and I'm a lot more comfortable with it, you know, because it did feel at the time, you know, those two nights, it felt like a battle. There's no other way to describe it. It did. With those things, whatever they were, to stop them from coming through, and it sounds so weird. But it took a long time to really process. But I'm okay with it now. I'm a lot better than I used to be anyway.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting in a way, too. It's like, it's just such a strange experience. And I kind of see why it would captivate people, especially people who listen to this show, because it's like, you know, if somebody asked me, and I'm sure I've said this to people, you know, it's like, I've known you for almost a decade, man, and I can't imagine why the fuck you would make up a story like that.
Well, there's no benefit to me. It's only ever detriment to me, you know what I mean? Why would I need to make that sort of story up? And remember, as I was saying to you, right at the time, I was working in a government job where I had security clearance.
Right.
And for that story to come out was potentially career damaging.
Right.
There was no fucking benefit for me to make up a story like that. It was only detriment, yeah? I don't need the attention. I had enough shit going on that's getting attention. You know, I was doing a TV show later on, wasn't I? I don't need that. So there's no benefit. I think, you know what, it resonates with some people because they think, oh, shit, this is actually credible. It's not some Farmer Joe who said he's seen a UFO, yeah?
Yeah.
I probed his ass and then he woke up in a field, you know? It's much more tangible, so they probably like it because it's something that makes them chew, makes them think. Yeah.
Well, it's just very strange. The whole thing is, like, really strange, and I've puzzled over it myself quite a bit, you know, thinking, like...
Well, I spend the rest of my life thinking about it, you know. I thought, you know, as I think I said to you when we met up, I thought it wouldn't get any stranger than what happened in 2012 with Brian Sykes and Laurie Simmons. I thought, well, you know what, nothing I ever do in the future is going to get any weirder. Do you know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right.
And then, of course, that thing happened, and it was the strangest thing in my whole life. And I'm glad to say that although strange things have happened to me since because of my investigations, nothing that I've done since has been as off the scale weird as that. Yeah.
Right.
So that I hope and pray genuinely is my high watermark for weird shit. I don't want anything worse than that coming along. You know. So there you go.
I guess what
it's opened me up to all those new things, those new ideas. So
well,
that's been good.
Things that sort of puzzles me in a sense, and maybe we can sort of just. I mean, I don't want to get too much into this because I feel like I'm just sort of like throwing a potential, a spark into a gallon of gasoline or something. But like, I'm still sort of puzzled by why, like you and John had this incredible experience, but Dr. Matthew Johnson, he seemed completely disinterested in it at the time. Like I would think that this would be some riveting thing that he would try and that he would stay up for or whatever.
I don't understand his behavior, but his behavior is very irrational anyway. You've got to remember that. So all of his behavior is irrational. And that's the way he rolls. I mean, he did look at it briefly, and then he runs down. As I said, he ran down the
right.
The pathway with his 45, saying you're not welcome. And then he goes to bed, and he said, well, you know, I was exhausted because I've been driving them around. But we've been there. This was the third night. We'd only driven that day as far as the town and back. It was
right,
not.
Right.
It was only a few miles.
Yeah,
it's
really puzzling to me, in a sense.
Yeah, no
know?
Reason to be. You know what, and I don't know, but I don't know his mindset, but this is a guy now who says he speaks to something called Zorth, a Bigfoot, and he's got magical healing powers, and Bigfoots are shape-shifting aliens. So I don't think I'm ever going to understand that rational mind, but I don't really want to, Tim.
Right,
you know?
Right, exactly.
I want to keep him distinct from it. Because I think he's built his part a lot in this. He's really a small player in the whole thing. It was really what happened to me and John over the two nights. And I think Johnson's tried very hard to make it his story and his account, when really he's a very small part of it.
Now, John joined us for the initial conversation. How's he been doing since all this went down?
Well, I think if he were here, I think he would say it caused him a lot of pain, and it really upset him and screwed him up.
Yeah.
I think he's better dealing with it now than he was. But, you know, the point I wanted to get across to you when we talked about that was it's very difficult to really get other people to properly understand, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think they struggle with it. They struggle with that notion. They struggle with the idea of it, and even family and friends who care about you, it's very difficult for them to appreciate. And you know, it's been a hard thing to deal with. I feel okay about it now, but you know, for a while I really didn't feel okay about it.
Yeah.
And I think John felt even less okay about it.
I can imagine. Well, I guess in a sense it's good that you guys were there together when it happened, because you at least had someone to...
Yeah, it would have been awful if we'd been on our own, I think.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It would have been very hard to stay awake. It was made it a lot easier that we were able to keep one another awake for those two nights. I wouldn't have liked to have been awake on my own battling those things. It was good that John was there to help me fight them.
Yeah.
As weird as that sounds, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, I mean, if I hadn't known you, I probably would have been like, that's crazy. But it's like I said, why, Adam spoke. I don't see why the fuck.
There's no benefit to me to make up some account like that, you know. It's only to my, it was only ever, in the short term, going to be to my detriment, I think. So,
right.
You know, I'm not trying to evangelize about my experiences or whatever else. I don't give a shit whether other people believe it. They can think what they like. You know. But if you're asking me, you know, at the time I felt like I had to talk about it for all the reasons we went through on the last show, and I have talked about it. So that's what happened, and there you go. And,
yeah.
People can take it or leave it.
There you go. And just for the record, Joshua Cutchin was asking me, we talked about this over dinner, but he's like a paranormal smell enthusiast, which is, I'm sure,
yeah.
great way he'll be happy I dubbed him that. But he wrote a book on sort of paranormal smells, and he was wondering if you detected any sort of intriguing smell during the entire experience.
No, and I didn't. You know, I never smelled anything of any nature. And I have, you know, I know what he means about paranormal smells, because at the Whaley House, a number of people report smelling cigar smoke when there's no cigar around. Yeah, and I did the other week. Me and Brett were on the porch, and we smelled cigar smoke, and nobody was around smoking a cigar. And you know, people say, well, that could be Thomas Whaley going out and smoking a cigar. So I know exactly what he means.
Yeah.
But I can say, you know, that in that place in Seoul, there was never any there was never any smell. I never smelled anything. I mean, we were smoking cigars, me and John, so my sense of smell wasn't that great. But that said, I never smelled anything. That's important I state that.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, man. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up here, because we could talk for a little while longer. But
yeah,
sorry.
Well, what I'll do is I'll speak to you in the next couple of weeks, yeah? Because I'm conscious it's 9:10, and I know Nadia will want me to hang out with her. So
I'll
talk to you about the other stuff in the next couple of weeks, yeah? So we'll
do
that.
Have
a
good time on your trip this weekend. Good luck. I hope you do.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
And
you know, maybe this will be the weekend, he said, for the 1,000th time.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I'm pulling for you, and I know the listeners are pulling for you, so it's...
Yeah, I'll try my best, you know?
Yeah, and if you come back and you're like... If something crazy happens, you know, let me know. We'll bring you.
I'll tell you. You know, if something crazy happens, I'll tell you what happened. I'll promise I'll tell you. But it's been. I've really enjoyed this show. I hope you are going to come back and do.
Oh yeah, dude. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not. You know.
Good.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just sort of like wrapping up the way we've been doing the show all these years in the seasonal format, and you know, we'll come back bigger and better and brighter than ever with some kind of new twist on things to keep it fresh. You know.
Good stuff. Yeah.
And good. I can't thank you enough for being such an important part of this show over all these years. I mean, you broke a lot of stories for us on Banal of America.
I gave you the exclusives, didn't I, over the years?
Yeah, you really did, man. You really did. The Dr. Sykes thing and the Bigfoot portal. And you know, that one, like
the
I said...
Orang Pendek stuff when that first came out, the new evidence, all that,
Yeah, and the Orang Pendek stuff. So, I mean, I can't thank you enough for being such a loyal friend and such a critical part of this show over all these years. And I you know, listen,
yeah, it's
man,
been my
we,
pleasure.
This isn't like I have to go into studio somewhere, so if something ever happens, we can, you know, just, we can always...
We can do it again, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
That's why people, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, it's like, dude, I'm not going anywhere, man. I'm having so much fun doing this season already that it's like, you know, who knows what's going to happen next. But it's kind of reinvigorated me. And tonight's conversation was awesome. So thank you very much, my friend.
Well, my pleasure, mate.
All right.
I'll speak to you soon.
All right. Have a good night, my friend.
And you. See you later.
Good night. Bye. There you go, folks. That was Adam Davies. Amazing stuff. Bigfoot portal. If you're still calling, if that's our test now. If you see someone calling it a Bigfoot portal and talking out of their ass, you know they don't know anything about this story. You know, 2 years later, I'm still flummoxed by it. I don't know what the hell to make of it. You know, it's one of those things I wish I was in the experience, and then I'm also glad I wasn't. So it's a very, very, very strange story. And like I said earlier, if it didn't come from Adam Davies, I'd be like, you're fucking crazy. But, you know, I've known Adam all these years. I've met Adam. He seems as legit as anyone I can even vouch for. So he's on the up and up. So I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say about the Bigfoot portal. I guess that's about it. So thanks. Oh, I want to mention a couple of birthdays. My buddy Zach Copley last night. Happy birthday, Zach Copley. And the illustrious Steve Ray, whose birthday is today, turning 39. Happy birthday to those guys. Want to make a sad mention. Probably won't mean anything to anybody listening, but my dear neighbor Sharon Sutter passed away earlier this week, and she was a dear, well, it was last week, I guess now, yeah, it's Tuesday, but a dear friend of my family. I've known her for years and years and years, and just a true character and a wonderful human being, and we're going to miss her a lot. So, yeah, like I said, probably won't mean much to anybody out there listening, but it meant a lot to me, and, you know, I'm going to miss Sherry a lot, and my thoughts and prayers and heart goes out to her family. So, and we'll pivot from that sad note to some uplifting, happy, fun news, and that is next week's edition of the program. Marie Jones returns to the show for her seasonal appearance on BOA Audio. I was looking, when I was looking up Adam's debut here on the program, I was checking to see when Marie's been on since season 3, which is absolutely amazing. So she's been on even longer than Adam, because I think Adam came on in season 4. So that's pretty crazy stuff. And she'll be on the show next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time. So we're going to go a little bit earlier in the evening, 8 p.m. Eastern time, Tuesday, May 30th, day after Memorial Day. That'll be Marie Jones. She's been up to all kinds of stuff. She's had a whole bunch of books in the last couple of years since we talked to her, and she's got a lot of projects she's working on. We're going to get into all that, and I'm certain, based on my conversations with Marie in the past, we're going to have a lot of laughs. So that is next Tuesday, May 30th at 8 p.m. Check out Banal of America and Banal of America on Facebook for all the linkage. And on that note, we're going to call it a night. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Until next time, this is Tim Banal.